I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Nancy Hunter Warren. She is a photographer, former staff photographer for the Museum of New Mexico's Laboratory of Anthropology here in Santa Fe, and Jill Sweet. She's a professor emerita of anthropology at Skidmore College, and the two of them have a new book called Pueblo Dancing. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's start with you, Nancy. This is a book of photographs, black and white photographs of mostly of Pueblo dances here in New Mexico and ceremonies and some of the individual people at these Pueblos. How did you embark on this whole subject matter?
Oh, boy. I was interested in capturing on film the different cultures in New Mexico. I was so interested in the different ways of life and the different traditions. And this was one of the subjects that fascinated me.
And so, I mean, did you just show up with a camera?
More or less, yes. In between, I was working on several projects at one time. And whenever there was a dance that I could photograph, I went and captured what I could.
And so this is a project that you did over, several decades?
Yes, 1974 to 1993, I think.
And in that time, how did the work evolve and how did your understanding of these dances evolve?
I can't say that I understood much until Jill came along. But I learned the different dances and what they were for, and it was the people that fascinated me. I was so interested in capturing the facial expressions and the things about the people that were so interesting, the costumes and what they held in their hands and how they danced and just everything. It just slowly evolved in my head.
Jill Sweet, you are an anthropologist. How did you come to this project?
Well, before I went into anthropology, I was studying dance in Southern California, University of California at Irvine. And so my initial interest was in dance, and I think I became a little bit disillusioned with dance in my own culture because it seemed so removed from a lot of people that never would go to the theater to see dance. And I was really sort of looking for where dance would be something that meant a lot to everybody in the community. And so I saw my first dance, I think it was in 1973, and I was really blown over by it, and I came out saying this is what I feel like is missing in my culture in terms of dance. This is something that is affecting everybody, and it's important to everybody, and not just a small group that go to the theater. So that was my initial draw to it.
I mean, it's a fundamentally different thing whether a dance is participatory or whether it's basically a spectator art.
Absolutely, and I guess I really, for the Pueblos, in some ways it's both, because sometimes they just watch, and sometimes they're in the mix of it, performing. But it was something that they really seemed like they couldn't do without. That in many respects they had an attitude that if the dances disappeared, the world as we know it would not survive, and that real commitment to the importance of the dances to keep things going, to keep the world working, was just completely blew me away. I was really interested in what made it that way. And so that's really what got me pulled into it. And then I decided that one of the better ways to try to learn about it was to study anthropology. That was sort of gave me some of the tools that I was able to use to learn more about the dances through anthropology and what in the 1970s a sub-discipline of anthropology started developing called dance ethnology or the anthropology of dance. And so I sort of became more involved in that end of anthropology along with another sub-discipline in anthropology that was developing in the 1970s, and that was visual anthropology. And basically, that's what Nancy's doing. Although I don't think, Nancy, you call yourself a visual anthropologist. I don't know, maybe you do, but
I'd like
you're basically
to.
Doing visual anthropology where you're using photographs and film to try to better understand the culture of people that are the subjects of those films and those images.
Nancy, do you think of yourself that way, visual anthropology?
It, to some extent, because I studied a little anthropology and I got into that. So it's, for me, it's kind of a combination of the visual in front of me and trying to understand, too. So I like both of those titles, photographer now, and visual anthropologist.
Now, you were working for the Office of Archaeological Studies as a photographer, Nancy Hunter Warren, and was your main work, how shall I say this, the living or the dead? In other words, ruins or people or both?
The dead. It was strictly archaeology.
Yeah.
That's what I did for them.
And so coming to basically photograph, would you say it was the descendants of the people whose ruins you were looking at to some extent?
It's certainly possible. I'm not sure which ruin of right now. I can't remember right now which ruin went with which pueblo.
Jill Sweet, let's talk a little bit more about the dances and the meaning of the dances. I find it fascinating that you became an anthropologist in order to understand Pueblo dances. So there is so much that those of us who were not, even if we've lived in New Mexico for a gazillion years, as I have and as many of us have, there is so much to learn about what these dances mean and what is expressed about the people's worldview who are dancing. Can you help us, for example, talk about the corn dance and the buffalo dance and some of the animal dances and what they express about the way of life and the beliefs of the people dancing?
Well, the angle that I when I started doing this work, I saw dance as the vehicle that would help open the door to a lot of these larger issues. In other words, some cultures spend a lot of energy and time in weaving or in painting. For the Pueblo people, if it's important to them, they're going to dance about it. So that it, looking at the dance is really going to the core and the heart of the group. And so I just, in a sense, approached it that way. And you start noticing certain symbols that come up again and again, and you can start to think about it in terms of their ecology and their subsistence and how they've made a living and survived. And certainly those things are important, so those things in a culture that uses dance to tell themselves about themselves and what's important in their lives. And in their history and in their mythology, those symbols start to tell a story. And one of the things I learned very early on is that when you're studying anthropology, they always teach you, you know, you have to learn how to interview people, and you go out and ask questions. Well, with the Pueblo people, you don't do that because, first of all, it's seen as really rude behavior. And secondly, they have a whole history of suffering because of letting outsiders know about their dances. So there's real historical reasons for being less than enthusiastic about talking about the meanings of these dances with outsiders. And so I really was always wanting to respect that and simply go to the dances and just open my eyes and see what's out there, because it is a public performance. So the symbols and the meanings, they're out there. They're being communicated. And if you think about it within the ecological context or the historical context, it's not that hard to kind of make sense of it all. And I'm not saying that I understand it the same way a Pueblo individual would understand it. Certainly my understanding is as an outsider looking in. There are certain advantages of being an outsider, because sometimes when you're not familiar with things, you haven't grown up with them, and they're not around you all the time, you see things that you might miss. In other words, if I tried to understand aspects of my day-to-day life that I take for granted, I'm not always questioning it. I'm not always looking at it with open eyes to sort of say, hey, what am I doing here, going to the laundromat, and what's this all about if I'm going over here to church and to pray to God and so on. In other words, when it's so familiar to you, it's hard to see.
Right.
So in a sense, even though I'm an outsider looking in, there are advantages to that. It's not that it's a better view than what a Pueblo Indian would come up with. It's a different view, and it's probably, I would express it differently than somebody who has lived that tradition all their life.
We're talking to Jill Sweet and Nancy Hunter Warren about the book Pueblo Dancing. So, Jill, let's continue with you for a moment. I mean, let's talk some specifics. The animal dances. So you have people dressing up as the kinds of animals that they hunt. What is the relationship, in your view, from your perspective, between the dancing and the actual act of hunting and eating and using these animals?
Well, it's an expression. It's a prayer for the abundance of animals in your environment. Dancing and dressing up as a deer, for instance, it pays honor to that animal. It's going to be sprinkled with cornmeal, which is seen as a sign or a gesture of encouraging the reproduction of that animal and the plentiness for the people to survive on. It's also tied in with, say, the buffalo, or tied in with bringing snow and the idea that you need a good snow during the winter time so that you have the runoff for the water that you need. So in a way, it's all tied up together that you need water to grow the corn. Corn is what the people eat. Corn is what is sprinkled on the animals that need to reproduce. So you have that symbol of corn tied in with water, tied in with the animals you hunt, tied in with the growing of the corn. So it's a subsistence tradition. Now, obviously, people aren't living like this now. There are some farmers, and they certainly Pueblo people that go out and hunt, but it's not their only subsistence. So I'm not claiming that things are exactly the way they were, but those symbols that have been so important, those animals, the vegetation of the corn being grown, and the connection with the desperate need for water in the Southwest at all times for survival, these symbols come up again and again in the dance, and that they make so much sense when you think about their ecological environment and their tradition of subsistence. Does that help?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was thinking about it in terms of one of the main themes of 21st century life is the extremely rapid destruction and exploitation of the earth that we're living on. And we don't have those kinds of rituals in industrial society, by and large, that keep us closely related to the earth and keep us aware of the cycles and keeping in balance. And it's certainly true that Native people historically have also used up and exploited the earth, at least in parts of it at different times in history. And I wonder if dances like the ones that we see here in New Mexico are a direct result of basically lessons saying, here's what we don't want to do, and let's avoid it by ritualizing the right course of behavior.
Certainly, and it's not that every Pueblo person that goes out into the for a dance and participates. It's not necessarily that everybody is thinking about that at every moment, but it's like as you're growing up and you keep seeing these dances over and over again and you keep performing in these dances over and over again, those important messages are going to be speaking to you. You might not realize it all the time. You might go through a period of your life when you're paying no attention to that stuff, but it is part of what you've been learning publicly through the dances your entire life. And yeah, it does speak to a lot of the ecological disastrous situations that we're sliding into. And that's what I meant when I said sometimes people will talk about if they stop dancing, the world as we all know it is not going to survive the way it is. I mean, they have a tradition of mythological tradition of, and I don't mean by mythological, I don't mean that it's false. I'm just saying it's in the stories that are told generation after generation of the fact that there were worlds before this one, and that this world, many will argue, is that this is the fourth world, and if we don't make it on this fourth world, we've had three chances where things did not work out well and we kept climbing to the next world, and this is the fourth world. We've got to make it work.
Nancy Hunter Warren, you, as you were saying a few minutes ago, spent a couple of decades doing this work. Over the course of that time, going back time after time, year after year, did you start to make friends? Did people start to get to know you?
Not as much as I would have liked. I wish I had had more time to pursue friendships. But I can't say that I did.
What about you, Jill?
Yeah, I have become really good friends with a number of individuals, and a few of them are, watching their kids grow up, and I've had a number of friends from some of the villages come out and visit me in upstate New York, and certainly whenever I go to the Southwest, I make sure I get time to see those folks, and they're a number of friends that mean a tremendous amount to me.
Nancy?
I was remembering that several friends that I went with to the Pueblos invited us to lunch, and I did get to know some people then, interesting people, and I'd see them year after year and follow the families, and they were artists mostly and followed their work, and that was very interesting to me.
Why did you choose to use black and white? Was that your chosen medium for all your work, or for this in particular?
That's true. It is my chosen. I'm not sure why, except to me it kind of abstracts. It's abstracting, and it reveals kind of the essence of something. And I also like black and white because I could do my own work in the dark room and make the photographs look the way I wanted them to look.
Right.
And that's important to me.
There's a long tradition of women photographing here in New Mexico and photographing Native people in particular.
You're right, but I knew Laura Gilpin, and she became a friend. When I had my first show in Santa Fe, she came to see it and liked my work and invited me to go with her to meet Ansel Adams. And she was a wonderful lady.
It's funny, I was looking up, as I was reading your book, I looked up on Wikipedia, San Ildefonso Pueblo, which is one of the pueblos in which you're photographing, and the picture that comes up is an Ansel Adams photograph.
Which photograph is that?
I'm not sure what the name of the photograph is, but there is such a long tradition of black and white photography. I notice also that you seem to really like photographing children, and the children are very much involved with this dance. What was it like to watch these kids? They were very young.
Oh, they were wonderful. Well, it's people. I like, it's not just children. I love photographing people. The old men, the beautiful women and their costumes, and the children were, they're so natural. They're so, it's part of their life. It's not an unusual thing they're doing. But it's they're taught how important it is. And just to capture all that was something very special.
And yeah, the old people whose faces are so weathered, they're like almost like old adobe walls or something.
That's right. They're beautiful.
Jill Sweet, another theme in the book, although it's not a big part of it, but it is something that you mentioned and that we see, Nancy, in the photographs, is the Spanish influence on the dances. Can you talk about that, Jill, a little bit?
Well, probably you're making reference to the Matachina dances that probably were taught to the Pueblo people by the early Spanish missionaries as a public performance of the battle between the good and the bad and evil and goodness, and tied up with symbols of the church. And certainly people that have been out to the villages see that the Pueblo folks are involved in both the church and their native religion. And I have never talked to anybody that felt it was a personal conflict, but that they could, in fact, be serious about their devotion to the Catholic Church as well as their native religion, and that they didn't see that as a contradiction in any way. And perhaps those dances that have become so much a part of their annual cycle that have the Catholic symbols in it is part of why they feel so comfortable with the existence of both. And again, I don't want to sound like I'm suggesting all Pueblo people feel comfortable with both, but my experience has been that they seem to, even the people who are most involved in the church, turns out, are also the ones who are most involved in the native dancing. So again, just from my experience, that seems like a very being comfortable with that coexistence.
We're talking to Nancy Hunter Warren and Jill Sweet about their new book, Pueblo Dancing. Now, there's a section in the book where you write, Jill, about tourism and the effect of tourism on the dances, and some of these, I mean, there are some dances that nobody can photograph and that no outsiders may attend, and then there's other ones that are for tourists, and you put in some very helpful guidelines for tourists. Talk about that. What are some of the mistakes that people make, and what are some guidelines for people who want to go and observe dances who are not Pueblo people?
Well, I think the main thing is to approach it as though you were going to a temple or a church, even though it's outside, even though it's it's a prayer being performed in a dusty plaza, that you want to act with respect. And if you do act with respect, then nobody gets insulted or their feelings hurt. And this sometimes happens just out of ignorance, that some people who will go out to the villages don't realize that you're not supposed to climb all over the kivas, that you don't want to get too close to the dancers and disrupt what's going on, and that these dances would be performed whether or not tourists were there or not. It's not a performance for them. They, in the cases when the village is open to tourists, it's a courtesy, in a sense. They are being invited in to share in this incredible performance of care for the earth. And it's not something that's going to stop if the tourists aren't there. There are some dances that are taken outside of the village and are done in more of less of a sacred situation. They're not as much, they're not so tied to the center of the village, but out in the periphery, for instance, probably the most famous is the Gallup Intertribal Ceremonials. And sometimes dances are taken out and performed in that context. They still are important. They still have religious meanings that are being expressed, but they are done in a much more relaxed kind of situation. It is not as tightly tied to the kiva.
Right. Now, one of the things, Jill, that you write about is that there's a totally different sense of time, time as not linear, but rather cyclical. And I was wondering, this is something I wanted to ask both of you. Did you have, when you were there, Nancy, photographing, or when you were there, Jill, as an anthropologist, a different sense of time yourself?
Got kind of lost in time when I was photographing. I didn't understand what was going on, like Jill does. She's taught me a lot. But I was so into the visual that I was just lost in time.
Yeah.
If you don't sort of adjust to a different time sense, you'll be very unhappy out at the villages during a dance.
Right.
Because people get very impatient, and when's the show going to start, or when are they going to change what they're doing? They keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. They don't really understand that that's the power of it, that repetitive motion, and the strength of that repetitive motion. It's a very different sense of time, and I agree with you, Nancy, that you get caught up into it, and if you don't, you're not going to be a very happy person at that situation.
Nancy.
Oh, she's right. When you start learning and understanding what they're doing, the repetitiveness, and it becomes much more meaningful when you start to understand what they're doing. And one thing that I noticed, that when they were dancing, the expressions on their face, they were so lost in their prayer that they were barely aware of us around them. It's just a very special thing. The more you learn, the more you love it.
The book is very poignant for me because, as you talk about at the beginning, Nancy, you were a photographer and you lost your sight, and Jill, you're an anthropologist and you got multiple sclerosis and can't just fly around doing whatever you want anymore. And so I don't know if either of you wants to comment on that loss and what these works mean to you now in retrospect.
It's important to me because I had the chance to capture this, even though I can't do it anymore. I'm very grateful that I had the chance to do it. And this book is a result, which it makes me very happy to know that I've done something with my life.
Jill?
I think of it as kind of a bittersweet irony that Nancy and I came together to work on this book. We didn't know each other, excuse me, and we both had these issues, and yet it really didn't matter. There's ways that somehow we were able to pull it together to do this project, even though I'm confined to a wheelchair and Nancy's losing her vision. But in a sense, we just made us, I think, in a way, more determined than ever to get the book done and to do it right. And I think we both feel pretty good about being able to do that and support each other, because we both have to deal with a number of issues, and it helps us understand one another, I think. We became really good friends in this whole process.
The thought that we were working at the same time yet didn't know each other is amazing to me. And the friends we have in common, because we were both in Santa Fe in New Mexico at the same time working. And Jill is one of my very best friends now.
Nancy Hunter Warren is a photographer. Jill Sweet is Professor Emerita of Anthropology from Skidmore College. The new book is called Pueblo Dancing. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.